This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Monday, the 9th of June. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. Our top story today is word direct from President Trump as he conducted a recent press briefing on Air Force One, where he was asked about his very public feud with Elon Musk. This comes direct from the White House YouTube channel.
Mr. President, you posted yesterday that a good way to save money would be to cancel some of Musk's contracts. How seriously are you considering that?
Well, we'll take a look at everything. I look at everything. He's got a lot of money. He gets a lot of subsidy. So we'll take a look at that. Only if it's fair. Only if it's fair for him and for the country, I would certainly think about it, yeah, but it has to be fair.
Mr. President, would you consider reopening investigations into his companies? There are a bunch of investigations.
I didn't know that they had any, but, you know, they had them. I would just let them speak for themselves. I had no idea. Excuse me. I have no idea whether or not they had investigations.
What's your view on Elon Musk as of today? I mean, have you heard from him at all?
Honestly, I've been so busy working on China, working on Russia, working on Iran, working on so many. I'm not thinking about Elon.
Patriotic Alliance leader and Minister of Sport, Arts and Culture, Gayton McKenzie, says if he were made president, he would completely scrap the broad-based Black economic empowerment policy. He was speaking at the Black Business Council Summit on Friday. McKenzie proposes replacing BEE with a single empowerment bank funded by a contribution of 1% of turnover from all white-owned businesses and previously empowered individuals. Here's McKenzie on the Daily Updates ZA YouTube platform.
I will cancel BEE in totality if I'm in power. I'll cancel it totally. What I will bring in the place of BE is an empowerment bank, one bank. How does that bank work? Every person that has a certain company that has been empowered previously, and every white person in this country, should contribute a percentage of the turnover towards the bank. I'm going to repeat that. Instead of telling white people, come, make me a 26% partner, I will not do that. That's not business. That's counterproductive. I will tell every company and every white person with a company, give 1% of your turnover. That will go to the bank. That will be a $1 trillion bank with first runs. That bank will then give money, loans, collateral. You get money without collateral from the bank. Your blackness will be your collateral. Your black skin. And there will not be you getting today 10 million. You are there next week again. You have to show what you've done. We'll have people empowering you, mentoring you. That's what I would have done. Lastly, you know, words are very nice. English is a very nice language. We like to use big English words. Triple P. What? I sometimes listen to people like, yo, what are you even talking about?
While McKenzie always seems keen to talk to broader topics such as BEE and abolishing foreign employees from South Africa, the Parliamentary Committee on Sports, Art and Culture is increasingly frustrated that the minister allegedly does not attend the portfolio committee meetings. The minister has missed 5 of the last 6 meetings. Last week, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Sports, Art and Culture said McKenzie's repeated apologies are no longer acceptable.
Chair, I wanted to raise a discomfort or discontent around the continuous unavailability of the minister. I think this is the 5th meeting, if not the 6th meeting, where the minister is not attending.
Yeah, I think let me make...
Can you allow me, Chairperson, to make my input?
Proceed.
I'm just a bit disturbed on the other side, Chairperson. I thought that you were calling...
What, Honourable Jacobs?
No, thanks, Chair. I was saying that mine is a discontent around the unavailability of the minister to appear before the Portfolio Committee. It has now become a norm for the minister not to appear before the committee. It has now become a norm for the minister to undermine the deliberations and discussions that are taking place at the portfolio committee. To a large extent, the minister has concluded that he's not going to account to this portfolio committee. In the last meeting, we have resolved as a committee that the minister must be summoned to appear before the committee. And it is for that reason that I'm raising my hand on and around the unavailability of the minister. It must be noted that the apology, first and foremost, from the minister must be rejected by this committee. Second to that, this committee must be finished with a report as to what is it that the administration has done as a way of summoning the minister as agreed in the previous meeting. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just thought that it's important that we must reemphasize our position as a portfolio committee of sports, arts and culture on and around the unavailability of the minister, especially when the minister cannot appear in front of the portfolio committee. But the minister would have a decency of running to X space or social networking space and rebuking the views that has been raised in the platform or in the right platform of which it is the portfolio committee meeting of sports, arts and culture. This matter cannot be taken light. We are running government here. We are not running a social media platform, or we are not twerking in front of social networking for the purpose of receiving likes and so forth, Chairperson. This matter must be taken serious. It has been put in under the blanket for quite some time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kgabo. I want to concur that the minister's apology is inadequate. And I think this applies to the deputy minister as well. And it's about time for the deputy minister also to come to this meeting and to tell us what her deployment and designated area of responsibility is. Whether she's sports, whether she's arts, whether she's culture, whether she's arts and culture, whether she's sport or whatever the case may be. We cannot, as Parliament, proceed in this fashion.
Cyril Ramaphosa has allegedly asked the Minister of Higher Education, Dr. Nobuhle Nkabani, to account for her conduct in Parliament last week. Nkabani recently appeared before the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education to explain her Sector Education and Training Authority chairperson appointments, which drew a lot of public criticism. The appointments were later reversed. Nkabani came under fire for the appointment of what is now being referred to as her secret advisory panel that she says was appointed on a voluntary basis to help her select 20 individuals. The minister has repeatedly refused to disclose the identities of the panel, who she says are high-profile, experienced individuals in the education space. Here's the minister answering questions on the composition of the panel at the Portfolio Committee meeting for Higher Education broadcast on Parliament TV.
In terms of their profiles, we appointed very reputable and highly profiled individuals, but on voluntary basis, they don't claim for executing this responsibility on behalf of the minister. We just ask for a panel to oversee and preside over the process on voluntary basis. It's not volunteers as if we went to the streets and asked for people to come and sift and select those who meet the criteria. The entire exercise was done by the independent panel that was appointed by the minister. However, it's very important for me to also register that they do that in voluntary basis. They do not claim for exercising this responsibility on behalf of the minister, and those people are highly profiled. I looked at the strengths of those and see their experience as well in the sector, because our sector needs a turnaround strategy. So I'm confident that the people that I appoint, be it looking or presiding over NSF or NSFAS, as well as the councils, and this one, they are credible and reputable in the society.
Who were the panel that the minister appointed to do that shortlisting?
Thank you so much for the question again. I believe all of us, we understand Section 11 of the Skills Development Act that says the minister must appoint the chairpersons of the accounting authority. So there is no need for me to come and declare my volunteers, people assisting me voluntarily to execute my responsibilities. I am not in a position. It is the minister. If there is something wrong that you believe it happened with the entire process, better you should, the person who is empowered by the legislation to execute that responsibility. That's unfortunate part of it.
In the same portfolio committee meeting on higher education, again broadcast on Parliament TV, Karabo Gagau, who is a member of the South African National Assembly for the Democratic Alliance, didn't hold back on her thoughts on the minister's refusal to name her voluntary advisory panel.
Minister, the whole reason why you have a selection and evaluation panel, the nomination task team, is because the King Ivy report on corporate governance at 2016 advises that it must be there. And at the heart of why that should be the case is so that there can be transparency in the work of government. You don't need to pay me for me to be known or held accountable for decisions that have to do with the governing or the governance of the Republic of South Africa. So it is all fair and great for you to say because you're not paying these people, you're not going to tell us who they are. But the bottom line is you are being paid. And the decisions that you make on a salary, on the lives of the people of South Africa, and a salary, here we patalang ke the people of the Republic of South Africa, those decisions must be transparently held accountable. So it is, for me, an act of shame that you hold the arrogance to tell us that it is none of our business who those people who advise you are. It is our business as the people of this committee, and it is the business of the people of South Africa to know who gets to vet, who gets to govern 19 billion rands of the country's coffers.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
On the international front and back to the Musk-Trump saga, ARK Invest chief futurist Brett Winton gives his view on what the Musk-Trump rift means for Tesla and the company's outlook. Let's dip into that conversation on Bloomberg's The Close.
Elon Musk, across the course of his career, has demonstrated that he can navigate companies towards the medium and long-term achievement of their mission. And so for Tesla, the most important thing to the company is not whether or not he's having a tiff with President Trump, but whether or not their robo-taxi launch in June in Austin will scale to multiple cities by the end of the year and across the U.S. by the end of next year. And that's where most of the value of the company lies. So when we underwrite companies, we look at the five-year underwrite, like what is this company going to be look like five years forward? Mm-hmm. And we think Tesla is, you know, very roughly a 10x over 5 years based upon our research. And so the political drama is noisy, but it's not new.
Yeah.
And we manage companies based on the fundamentals, not on headlines. And that's why we actively manage, because we can manage around this volatility. You know, disruptive innovation is by its nature volatile. And so we, of course, you know, pay attention to and think about how this impacts our assessment of the companies. But
Well, I am curious, though. I mean, I know, you know, we kind of make fun of the whole soap opera of it. And I understand that is the noise. And you are right. That does not necessarily translate into fundamentals and the bottom line. But when you start to hear the president or other officials in the White House talking about canceling contracts that whether it's Tesla or some of Elon Musk's other properties may have had involvement with getting rid of EV mandates and other things that have been supportive of this company and its bottom line, I'm wondering when at all, if you get a little bit nervous?
Yeah, well, across all of our positions, we have a thesis risk score, and we do raise that on the basis of, political vulnerability or vulnerability to regulation. The way we underwrite the companies is we don't assume that government subsidies are going to persist, because if you have exponential growth, then those subsidies become exponentially more politically costly. And so often they get pulled out from under companies just when they're relying upon them most. I think level the playing field for Tesla or for SpaceX or for Neuralink, and you will still have the best company in the world. There's a reason that SpaceX has the billions of dollars in contracts that it has. It's because it's the only company that can effectively deliver the launch services that not just the government, but commercial entities need. And so, yes, we have exposure to SpaceX, we have exposure to Neuralink, we have exposure to Tesla, and you know, we believe in the long-term vision that he's espousing for those companies.
You mentioned robotaxis and Tesla and how that's really the future for the company. The question is whether the fallout with President Trump complicates the regulatory environment for those autonomous vehicles and then potentially slows the path forward for Tesla's robotaxi network. I mean, that is something that may be a factor in 5 years' time.
Sure. It's a fair point. And I think a global or a national kind of federal regulation on robotaxi would help not just Tesla. It would help Waymo. It would help any company that's trying to deliver autonomous vehicle services to the public. And so if that doesn't happen as a result of this, well, that'll hurt the American people. And it will pose the same headwind on Tesla that it does on Waymo and anybody else that tries to enter the market. So it does impact our, you know, the adoption curve of robotaxi is really important to our underwriting of the company. And so if we had to reduce that adoption curve over time, then that would impact our five-year point of view. Now, in our work, we actually thought there was only a 60% chance that they would launch robotaxi in this year. We thought it was a 40% chance next year. It's pretty clear it's going to happen this month. And so far, they've actually been surprising, at least in the near term, in terms of their ability to execute. And we'll see.
Yeah.
On the same topic, Nancy Tengler, CEO and CIO of Laffer Tengler Investments, says the outlook for Tesla is still good, but Musk needs to dial down the drama with Trump. Tengler gives some insight into when her firm might next add to its current Tesla holdings. Here are Carolyn Hyde and Ed Ludlow on Bloomberg Technology.
Part of what we saw yesterday is what we always see in the short term, and that is that the algorithms read the headlines, then the shorts jump in, and this is the stock and the guy that everyone loves to short. So, I mean, I'm not saying I think this was well-advised, what Elon did, but I do think the fundamentals ultimately will trump this issue, if you will, no pun. And that's important because this might be a great entry point. We'd bought in, added again to our holdings on March 10th, and I think the stock was trading about 240. That looked really smart until yesterday. But that said, I think you do want to add it in the volatile periods because Musk has a habit of teetering on the edge of destruction and then pulling himself back and in the nick of time. He has said himself he's wired for war and he often shoots himself in the foot. And clearly, he's not wrong about that.
The shooting in the foot, how prolific could that get in terms of getting robo-taxis and a cyber cab on the road and implicating that long-term thesis that so many people hold?
Yeah, I don't think it will. I mean, Caroline, I don't know, but because President Trump's equally unpredictable. I was reading a story about one of his previous advisors who had given him all the judicial nominees in his first term, and he called him a sleazebag who hates America. So he has a habit, too, of embracing people and then disengaging, and not only disengaging, but saying some pretty rough things about him. So, but that said, I do think that what the administration understands is they do need productivity-driven growth to make this tax bill work, and a good portion of that is pointed at Elon Musk and his efforts and initiatives, including robotaxi. I expect that next week, after the robotaxi announcement, unless something ridiculous happens, that we will be talking about something else as it relates to Tesla.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more context on both the local and global front. As always, thanks for watching.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.